You're listening to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, your escape to reality.
Hello and welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Today is Wednesday, December 21st, 2011, and this is your host, Stephen Novella. Joining me this week are Bob Novella.
Hey, everybody.
Rebecca Watson.
Hello, everyone.
Jay Novella.
Hey, guys.
Evan Bernstein.
Hey-ho, how you doing?
And Mike LaSalle.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Mike.
How you doing,
Jake?
Mike?
Good. ML. How was everyone's year?
Super.
It was good. Thanks for asking.
That's what we're talking about tonight. So Mike always joins us for the year-end wrap-up episode. And so now we are going to talk about 2011, a year of SGU science and skepticism. We're going to start, as we always do, with the best of. It's actually best and worst of 2011. We've tabulated the feedback from our listeners, those who sent us email or chimed in on the forums. Thanks, everyone who responded. So let's go down the list. The first thing on the list is the best episode.
For me, I've got two shows that really stand out. The second TAM show this past July was so much fun. We had True Fellas that we premiered. We had Rebecca and my science fiction contest, which turned out not as embarrassing as I had feared, but still very funny. I also talked about that last shuttle launch that I was actually on site and saw. So for me, that second day that we taped was a lot of fun. And the second one, of course, I mean, how could we not mention SGU-24? That was just an epic monstrosity of an episode that was was crazy work, but still it went by pretty fast, I think, and I thought it was very successful. And a lot of fun.
Yeah.
The SGU-24 did get a lot of mention from our listeners. I mean, just for the heroic effort, if nothing else. It was fun. It was a lot of work. It almost destroyed Jay's marriage before it happened.
Oh, my God.
He was working so hard for it. And luckily, we planned the SGU-24 show 2 weeks before Jay got married. Or was it 1 week?
It was one week.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
But it was 4 weeks or something, and then Jay, you moved the wedding back, I think.
Are you blaming Jay for this?
No, not at all. But
yeah, we actually moved the date back 2 weeks, so it was originally planned for roughly 3 weeks before, and we had to change the place we were doing our wedding because we had too many people. But it's like one of those things. You never know how bad it's going to be until it happens, until you really get into it. And it took me a month to build the set, and of course the leading up to it, the 2 weeks up to it, it was like every night for 4 or 5 hours I was like screaming at everyone. I was not sleeping. I lost like freaking 10 pounds. I was freaking out. It was horrible.
Jay made me cry twice.
Oh, you probably deserve it though.
I'm not the one who spray painted the freaking camera, Bob.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got 5 molecules of paint on the camera, pardon me.
CCD chips, Bob. CCD chips.
Another episode that got a mention was 290, episode number 290, where we did, we had the guest rogue, Dr. Ray Greek. A lot of people liked that interview. And just overall thought it was a good episode with a lot of good discussion.
Well, that was a good interview because Ray and you did not agree on a couple of different things
that we were
discussing.
Polite disagreement on the whole animal rights thing and research.
Well, you guys handled it really well. I mean, there was no confrontation whatsoever. And, it was pretty significant disagreements that I thought you guys were having. But, both of you definitely were respecting each other. And I remember Ray emailing us afterwards saying, wow, it turned out so good. I was so happy that, you and I were communicating so well and all that. And it was just a cool disagreement to have without there being any, nobody's hair was standing up.
Well, this kind of dovetails into the next best of, which is the best interview of the year. And Ray Greek did get some mention. Joshy Berger, I think, got a lot of mentions as well.
Joshy is well-loved.
He's a funny guy. We had good chemistry with him on the show, and I think that everyone
He's a force of nature, that guy.
Yeah. Joshy definitely is incredible to talk to, even when you're just hanging out with him. He's always funny. He always has, profound or provocative things to say and everything. And, he pretty much is who he is on the show. He is in person, and Never a loss of energy with that guy. He's awesome.
Check out his Facebook post. He's like the boldest guy I know, and only Joshy can get away with that stuff. And you don't even, you know, it doesn't bother you that I wouldn't dream of saying things like that.
His background amazes me because he effectively escaped that Jewish cult of a family that he was born and raised into,
right,
and has been effectively trying to bring people over and escape from that kind of lifestyle.
Yeah, he's a good skeptic.
Rigid orthodoxy.
He is pulling people over, and he is educating a lot of people, and he does it with, you know, in your face and humor and everything, and it works. It's really good. I'm actually, Joshy's one of those people that I'm excited to see what he pulls off. You know, I'm sure that he's going to have something happen that's going to be pretty cool.
And he made a cameo for us at the 24-hour show. He cooked us lunch or dinner on Saturday, which was
that was awesome.
The other interview that got a lot of mention was a recent one with Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yeah, I put that on.
Yeah,
my list
Neil's
too.
Just awesome.
Ditto.
He's so charismatic. You just can't help but just be in awe when he talks. He just grabs your attention and you just won't let it go. It's really there's not many speakers that are like that.
Yeah, never enough time with him, it seems. I mean, we could go on for days talking about things with him. You just never tire of Neil.
Yeah, that's to say we've interviewed him a number of times, and it's always been fantastic every single time.
He's one of those people that I feel has really put a lot of energy into educating himself and polishing himself to actually do this. He's very calculated in what he says and how he interacts with his audience. And I've heard him talk about this.
Like, yeah.
You know, he monitors his audience and he's so quick that he can actually change what he's doing and change, you know, his demeanor and change what he's talking about.
Although, you know, it's funny. When I edit the interviews, when I edit the shows, I pick up a lot of things that I miss while we're doing the interview, while we're doing the show. And during the Neil deGrasse Tyson interview, we were talking about what you were just saying, Jay, about how you present yourself and studying how to be a good speaker and being very deliberate in word choice and whatnot. And he sort of gently chided me during the interview for using the term sensory modality, as if that was too technical a term to like throw at a lay audience. And we had a little bit of fun with that. But when I listened back to the interview, I noticed, which I didn't notice at the time, which would have been perfect, but like not 2 minutes before that, he used the term in situ, which I think is a little bit more obscure than sensory modality. And it's like if I only had picked up on that, it would have been a perfect comeback. But I didn't.
Next time. You get it next time.
Pick up on it until I was editing
the show.
It's tough
to one up, Neil.
I know, it's tough.
Hey, yeah, right.
Can I give an honorable mention to Mark Mervine, who came on and who's an expert in nuclear power with the time of the Fukushima nuclear
he was
meltdown.
On my list too. Like, I wouldn't even call that honorable mention. I think he was he did an awesome job, and huge thanks to his daughter Evelyn, who's writing for Skeptic at the time, for getting us that interview, because he was very knowledgeable and it was just, it was the perfect person to have on at the perfect time.
I have to say, as much as I love interviewing all of our skeptical colleagues and the regular players. They're regular for a reason because they're awesome. But often the interviews that I find like the most surprisingly interesting are those with just scientists or just experts who are not part of the skeptical community or as part of the skeptical movement. Not the kind of name that would come up if you think about like who would be a good interview for the podcast, but they have just some area of expertise that they're really interested in talking about, or they did some research that they want to talk about. And often those are, in many ways, the best interviews. Like, who would have figured this, this nuclear scientist or technician really, being such an awesome interview.
And along the same lines, Paul Provenza was one of my favorite interviews to do this year. I found him surprisingly relatable. I guess I had low expectations because I assumed that he was too brilliant to be nice and to get along so well with all of us. But he was really fantastic and down to earth. I really enjoyed talking to him.
Yeah, he got a lot of votes too.
I completely was in love talking to Bill Nye. I love talking to him.
Yes. And,
you know, I can't not mention him, even though I think it's more personal. Maybe the interview was good, but I was sitting there like just bouncing out of my seat the whole time because I just love being in front of that guy. And also, George Rabb to me.
Rob.
I love it. George Rabb to me.
Hey, Trab.
I love having him on the show, and I absolutely love talking with him, and I think we get into very cool conversations with him.
Well, speaking of George, I wanted to mention another episode as in my top five for the year, and that was the episode that aired on September 24th. That this is
323.
This was the first show that we ever recorded in front of a live audience, but not a live show. You know what I mean? When we were at Dragon Con, we did our live show. We're on stage, you know, recording a show in front of an audience. But then we also recorded a studio audience show where they were just observing us recording the show. And it was a small, intimate group, like 10, 15 people. And it lent such a fun dynamic to this show. It was just something about it that was different. And
Brian Brushwood joined us later.
Joined us as guests on the show. And we definitely need to do that again. That was a lot of fun.
That was show though, because we went in areas like we never even approached personal material like this before. Like we were talking about crazy stuff. A few people actually that wrote in, said something. We were talking about when we were kids and about peeing and stuff and all sorts of crazy stuff.
Yeah, that's Gio.
Yeah, Gio did bring that out that night.
I mean, I think I speak for all of us when I say that our live shows are some of the most fun to do because we have a different dynamic when we're all in one room. For those listeners who don't know, we record this in completely different cities, so we don't actually see each other. So doing the live show gives us a completely different dynamic, but we're still in front of a large audience every time we do a live show, except for this one particular show we were doing where there were only, how many, 15
people? Yeah, I think 15
maybe.
Yeah.
And we were kind of sitting in a circle, like we could see each other in a way that we never have seen each other before during a recording. I have to say, too, when we talk to Randy, I have so much fun during our conversations with Randy, and he, you know, for a guy in his 80s, He jumps in the room with us. He's just as funny as the rest of us. He's got more speech craft than all of us.
Well, yeah, he's obviously been doing this a long time. He's very very polished. He's actually the only professional showman, you know, of all of us, obviously. And he's recently he's been very sharp. You know, I think he's really recovered well from his prior issues, his ailments. And it's great to see Randy in good form.
He's so lucky. I know I'm just going to be a blithering idiot if I reach that age. Yeah. He's as sharp as a tack.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a quarter that sharp when I have a cold.
Yeah.
I mean, let alone having all the
It's all that
NyQuil issues.
You drink.
Yes. I do drink a lot of that. It's delicious. What can I say?
So, Jay, you mentioned talking about peeing, and that got a lot of vote as the funniest moment of the year when Bob and I were reminiscing about how far you could pee as a young child.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that again.
Just that much. You have to go back and listen to the episode.
Well, the listeners like it.
I had mammoth skills at urinating when I was 6 years, 5 or 6 years old.
So, what other bits did you guys like from the year?
I don't know why this stands out for me. I just absolutely loved it the moment that it happened, and of course, it has something to do with me making fun of Rebecca, but I'll play it for you.
It's not out of the question for a plant to produce sound. That happens, you know, even like Venus flytraps and things can produce small amounts of sound. But I think it's more likely.
Yeah, right. What do they say, Rebecca?
I think
land here, please. Come. Land here.
Are you done?
And then at the end of that show, I don't know where you got the second clip from, Steve, but this is what Steve played at the end of that show as like the
outtake,
you know, the Easter egg.
And until next week, this is your Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
Come here. Come.
Oh, man. For the 24-hour show and Jay's wedding, I stayed with Jay and Courtney for 2 weeks, and I think Jay said that, come here, line about, I don't know, a good dozen times.
Something gets stuck in my head and I just blow it out. I say it a million times until I can't, you know, I can't stand it anymore. The other bit, another bit I loved, which I think is funny, and I, you know, I didn't really, when it happened, it was in the same episode as the come here thing, where I was absolutely sure that there was no way that the multiverses were basically sending each other information. Remember that science item? It was science or fiction
is
item.
Is this the one where you had like a complete nervous breakdown?
I was so pissed. I was so freaking mad because it,
that was pretty entertaining.
So I actually have some audio for that, so I'll play that right now.
All right, the first one about the multiverse. Bob, come on.
Bob.
give him a chance. I think most of the reason why I think that is because of what Bob has drilled into me over the years. And Bob, right. Really? Come on. Well, let me talk. Jay, I agree that discovering or detecting something outside our universe is probably impossible. But Jay, I disagree with your premise. They don't necessarily need to detect something outside the universe. They could potentially detect another universe that somehow interacted with our universe. That's a much more higher probability.
Bob, we're in an enclosed system.
I know, but if the multiverses interact somehow, so perhaps they could possibly look at that interaction, perhaps looking at the cosmic microwave background radiation or something.
Okay,
sort of
so which would mean that there has to be some type of energy exchange, which there isn't. Bob!
I'm just saying, Jay, it sounds more plausible than you
plausible?
Might think.
Plausible? Oh my God.
If you've got these other multiverses, they could potentially interact somehow with the cosmic microwave background radiation, perhaps. So there could be some sort of interaction. So yeah, detecting a universe outside of ours, no, but interacting
Bob,
with ours,
I can barely
yes, that's
find,
possible.
I could barely find my way to the post office and you're telling me that we're detecting the multiverses?
Yes, up, through,
well, to be fair, you're not a physicist.
Thanks, Rebecca.
Mm-hmm. Well, true,
and you were
physicist.
Wrong about that, Jay. That's a reminder. Yeah, you were wrong.
I was dead wrong. Yeah. I still
that's
don't believe it.
Point.
But passionate. I mean, you know, you get points for passion.
I still don't think we're detecting the multiverse.
So, Jay, is that your most unbelievable but true science clear. Or fiction story for the year?
That yeah. happens to be, yes, that was the one I put in there.
Yeah, that was a pretty good one.
You pretty much have to.
Someone voted for the Who's That Noisy Exchange on episode 287 about My Little Pony.
Yeah, and I'm glad that we that I was there to defend at least a little bit My Little Pony and you know, assert how cool it is. Because I think a large portion of our audience are bronies and other My Little Pony fans.
Mm-hmm. Rebecca, please.
Hey, if they're teaching
truly.
Skeptical messages,
like juggalos?
More power to the pony.
If you'll recall, we well, first of all, the reboot of that cartoon series has a huge following, and it's a huge overlap with our particular brand of science-loving geeks. And second of all, if you'll recall, after we played that Who's That Noisy, the next week, someone wrote in to say that he was a writer for Little Pony.
And that episode,
and that
in
he's
fact.
A skeptic. Yeah, he helped write that episode, and he did his best to put skepticism into My Little Pony. So, yeah, we've got people on the inside there. We got to give them some respect.
All right, well,
I don't know if you've convinced me. Mike, do you have any best moments for the year?
The 24 show for me was a good one.
Let's play it now.
Yeah, let's cue that up.
Well, I'd be curious to hear what out of the 24 hours, what was your favorite bit that we did during that
Which
whole time?
Hour?
Which hour? Was the best hour one. 13 was awesome. No, just,
I like the quiz show in which I kicked all of your butts. That's just a side point that's not really relevant.
I have two very memorable moments during the 24-hour show. One was the D&D game.
Yeah, that was
surprisingly awesome.
Yeah, I thought our friend Doug did an incredible job, like coming up with a skeptically themed, like 30-minute D&D game. It was a lot of fun. I was really surprised. We had no idea. You know, we came up with all these ideas of what we're going to do, and we don't know what's going to work or not, what wasn't going to work.
Not just that, Jay. You know D&D very well. It's generally, there's huge, long, boring stretches, and it's not necessarily made for video at all. And he made it just jam-packed with awesomeness, and it was fast-paced and interesting, and he perfectly tuned that for the venue, like I did not anticipate could be done.
I have to say, I was skeptical of the whole idea of running a skeptical D&D game during a live show because, yeah, my conventional wisdom is watching other people role play is the most boring thing in the world. But even when the people role playing are having fun, watching them do that is just incredibly boring. But Doug, his performance of the game was what made it fun.
Yeah, and it was fun even for people who don't like D&D. Like, I've never played D&D in my life, and I thought it was a lot of fun. And we heard from a lot of listeners who have never played, and they thought it was awesome too. So I think that that's the mark of a successful D&D game.
And, you know, now, Rebecca, you have played D&D.
No, so well, yeah, I mean, I have just then, yes.
So you can't say you've never played anymore.
Or you could call it Skeptics and Dragons if you want.
Skeptics.
One more point on your geek list.
I've seen you in the LARP costume too, so.
That's true. I've done all of that now. I want to play a full game, but I would rather it be skeptical, but so long as Doug runs it, I think I'll be happy.
We'll have you down for a weekend and we'll fulfill all of these other geek/ dork fantasies of yours. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I have to make like a dork bucket list. A dork it list.
Dork bucket list.
And then we'll have you down for dinner.
The other thing I loved, I really thought was fun and just unexpectedly good was our musical jam with George.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, God,
I hated that. I hated that because I hate trying to keep rhythm. I like playing guitar. I like playing the trumpet. I can't play the tambourine to save my life.
It was more like we were, you know, the thing that made it interesting was we were doing it together. You know, we've never done anything like that together before. And, it, you know, George drove us well through that. And it was the chances of that not working as well as it did were great. And it did. It worked. It came off funny and it was fun to do. But you know what? I think now that I think about it, my favorite part of the whole thing, other than the second it ended, was when we interviewed Dad.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was-
yeah. That was another segment that really was so much better than I anticipated.
You're just a pessimist,
you have
Bob.
These little horror stories go through your mind. Oh, Dad, please don't say that. And please don't mention this. And it was really scary because this is live. But it was just like an order of magnitude better than I imagined. Like, holy crap, this is great.
Yeah, well, I had my finger on the kill switch the whole time in case you... Oh, another technical
problem. The kill switch
problem.
Was just a gun pointed at his father.
But, you know, your parents can give a perspective on you that nobody else can. And it's not always the perspective you'd like to have broadcast to thousands of people. all right. So let's move on to first... the Jackass of the Year.
Oh, yeah.
And then Skeptic of the Year. This is always a fun segment.
I'm going to put my coin down on Brzezinski.
Brzezinski is on my short list. Yep.
That's who I have.
Stanislaw Brzezinski for trying to intimidate science bloggers who were criticizing him for being a cancer quack, for selling his chemotherapy, anti-neoplastons, as if it's some natural non-chemotherapy, and claiming to have like personalized chemotherapy regimen, you know, by doing genetic analysis. It's all just made up crap.
Someone on the forums put their finger on it. They said Brzezinski deserves to have the Streisand effect renamed for him.
Yeah.
Which is the name for the effect of, you know, the more you try to keep something quiet, the more the internet will publicize it.
Yeah. Right, although that was named for Streisand before the internet. But yeah, and some people, the flip side of this, at least one listener voted for the skeptical blogging community as Skeptic of the Year for having the backlash against Brzezinski and other similar episodes. When someone tries to suppress legitimate skeptical criticism by bullying or intimidation or threatening a lawsuit or you know, calling somebody's complaining to the to their internet service provider to get them shut down in some way. We decided, okay, now we're going to magnify the criticism 100 times and criticize you further for being a bully. And that's worked every time. And this was just the latest episode. It was awesome.
Yeah, you cannot do that on the internet. They have a clear lack of understanding and appreciation for how powerful the internet is and how willing people are to not play. They're not going to do what you want. That's it. You cannot hold information back.
We have a network now. You know, if someone says, hey,
we have
a posse,
gang, is what
we
Steve
do. This guy's trying to shut me down. The word goes out, and within a day, there's at least a dozen of the highest profile, you know, science blogs on the planet are now criticizing you. Good work.
I had to throw out, I mean, this guy, you know, didn't kill anybody and didn't take away anyone's medicine, but still really annoyed the crap out of me. Harold Camping.
Of course, that's my guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
he's on my
because
list.
He turned the stupidest little thing, and the media blow up is what really surprised me. I mean, I drove every day by billboards with people spending thousands of dollars just on a stupid billboard advertising this crap. And cars that had stickers and signs on them. And I saw it on the news like all the time. And I've read articles about it. It's like, oh my God, how is this getting such play? How are so many people focusing on this and wasting tens of thousands of dollars on something?
He did destroy people's lives.
And I mean, there were people who put down their pets. And I mean, he caused an incredible amount of havoc in people's lives. He definitely deserves to be on the list.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He's the loser of the year. I would definitely vote for him for loser of the year.
That was a very illuminating event because, you know, I'm hearing people at work talk about it.
You mean taking it seriously?
Yes.
Yep.
Wow.
I have on my list for Jackass of the Year. I'm not sure exactly who it is, but it's the people who are putting those Italian scientists on, or geologists, I guess, on trial for manslaughter for not predicting the earthquake.
Yeah, that was pathetic.
Ken Ring made my list as well.
Yeah, good one. I heard from a few of our Australian listeners who were very Australian/New Zealand listeners who were very thankful that we called out Ken Ring on his BS. They were kind of like the Brzezinski thing. They were relieved to see other skeptics around the world pick up the story and criticize him for it.
All right, you guys didn't mention my number one yet.
Wakefield.
Kevin Trudeau.
So Kevin Trudeau, he's always on the list, but I picked him a few years ago. I picked Egnor as my nemesis 1 or 2 years ago.
What about what do you think? Bennett? Is it Bennett?
Oz.
Oz. Mehmet Oz is my pick for this year as my anti-skeptical nemesis. The thing that really pushed him over the top was the arsenic in apple juice story this year, where he
made
a non-issue into a complete scaremongering, ignoring the FDA and ignoring the government, who essentially saying this is irresponsible reporting. You're getting your facts wrong. Here are the real facts. And they said, forget it. We're going to do the story anyway. Screw the facts. This is, you know, this is going to get us good ratings. You know, completing his journey to the dark side, essentially, with that piece. So he definitely wins for me this year.
And you got to confront him face to face on his show.
There's that too. I mean, I have to sort of, he has to be my pick this year since I was on the Dr. Oz show and did go front or toe to toe with him.
Oh, how about Mabus? What's his name?
Oh, David Mabus.
Mabus. Yeah. Very good, Jay.
That's interesting. Yeah. So this is a guy who has been harassing skeptics online for years. He's sending us, you know, death threats, emails, tweets, getting multiple sock puppets to leave comments. I actually had to change commenting policy on my blogs just for this guy. Seriously. Just to keep him from spamming our comment section. Finally, we were able to get the authorities to take action against him, and he was arrested.
Thanks mostly to Tim Farley
for getting that going.
Yeah, he did good work on that.
Compiling every death threat that Mavis ever sent and then focusing on the police until they did something about it.
Those Canadian Mounties are hard to get motivated, I got to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was thanks to a couple of people in Canada who got threatened who were able to push the issue there.
Right.
Are you okay now, Mike?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay, good.
The sad thing is that recently he appears to have made a resurgence. Some people,
really?
I saw a link to a forum where there were some Mabus-like rantings, and he has a very distinctive style that I think would be difficult and pointless to emulate. So it does sound like he's back out on the streets, but I have yet to receive a death threat, and I don't think he's, I think at this point he's keeping it to internet, obscure internet forums. So hopefully it'll stay that way.
I thought he was in jail.
Yeah, but not forever. What do you think? That's a life sentence for harassing people on the internet? The guy's going to get out.
Well, the hope wasn't that he would go to jail, but that he would get help.
Help,
you know?
Right. But he does sound like he needs help.
Yeah.
All right, skeptic of the year. So the person I think got the most votes from our listeners was Christopher Hitchens, which, you know, it's a little, I think, biased because he, you know, we've just been focused on him and talking about him because he just recently died. Somebody made a very good point that not just to honor him because, you know, he recently died, but he really worked tirelessly right up until the very end. And that definitely deserves a mention and recognition.
He not only worked tirelessly to the end, but he defended his own personal position and his scope of the universe and everything
his
about
world
his
view.
Own mortality. Yeah. Right. He did not change under even, you know, the pressures of staring death, you know, right in the face.
No, in fact, he used it as an opportunity to be even more outspoken and eloquent about, I think, the power of the materialist worldview.
You know, I'm actually surprised at how emotional talking about Christopher Hitchens makes me. You know, definitely was not a personal friend of mine of any stretch of the imagination or whatever, but I just his story and his success and how true he was and how strong he was has an effect on me. And I definitely, he's definitely the skeptic of the year for me. He struggled the most and I think succeeded the most this year.
I'd probably mark him down as my atheist of the year. Skeptic of the year, though, I don't know, I got to go with another crowd favorite. I don't know if he's my number one. I haven't decided yet, but he's got to be up there. Is Rhys Morgan?
Yeah,
he's made my list.
Like to me, he's almost in a way the opposite of choosing Christopher Hitchens because Rhys Morgan is someone
not
who's
dead.
Very young who has his entire life right. ahead of him, and yet he's displayed such amazing courage and conviction. For his age, for any age, really. Like, he would be kicking ass if he was in his 30s, but the fact that he's very young makes it all the more impressive.
Yeah, I agree. He's definitely on my short list. And that one feature is what strikes me the most, is that he is just calmly fearless about, you know, confronting pseudoscience and nonsense. And, like, as Christopher Hitchens said, don't be a spectator to nonsense or to evil, and Rhys is living his life that way. So yeah, he definitely is on the short list.
At 17, I mean, geez, I wish I was a fraction of what he is at 17 when I was 17.
I was a putz when I was 17.
Oh god, I was so stupid.
Gosh, I don't even like thinking about what I was believing back then. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, definitely.
Good choice, Rebecca.
He definitely has high intelligence and he's very well spoken, and he is successful. He's been doing a good job. He sets his mind to something and he gets somewhere with it, and that's definitely commendable.
I got those two on my list. I also have you, Steve, on my list for actually going on the Dr. Oz show.
Yeah.
And you know, doing really well and not being editable, you know what I mean?
I tried my best.
Yeah, well, Steve is on my short list for the exact same reason, because oftentimes you see skeptics going into the lion's den. And actually, just yesterday, I saw a video of Paul Offit giving a fantastic talk, as he always does. But he was talking about how he would never go on Oprah because he's like, you know, Oprah and Jenny McCarthy are on the show and you've got your hero and your victim and your villain. Which part do you think you're going to play if you're going on that show? So, you know, yeah. Don't go on a show just to be the villain. It's too difficult. And I think that for 99.9% of skeptics, that's true. Like, I often see skeptics going on shows and I'm just like, what are you doing? This is not working. You know, you're getting edited all this shit.
It's easy to fail.
Yeah, but Steve, you did a fantastic job going in there and, yeah, not giving them the opportunity to edit you poorly and making the case for skepticism in a way that was relatable and easy to understand. You got in, you got out, you did a good job.
And guys, do you remember talking? I remember we talked about this before we went on, and we seriously brought up the idea of like, or maybe it was through email, like, well, you know, maybe he shouldn't go because you know what they could do in editing.
Oh, I was totally against it.
Yeah.
I was very much against it.
Not me. I wish I could have gone.
Well, I think I benefited a little bit from low expectations. You know, I think that there was so much fear about how horrible it was going to be that all I had to do was survive. And I think I managed to survive. So
yeah, and not, you know, spew flames out of your mouth.
Not vomit on the stage and have my head turn around at 360 degrees, right?
Steve, it definitely think that you're more, you know, you're definitely more resilient now than you've ever been. Your chops are very well rehearsed, and you know the material, you know how to talk. That's very important. You've definitely learned how not to give them sound bits and things that they can turn around and you know, with them using their weasel words and everything.
Yeah, I talk good.
The fact that you dodged the editing.
Good sound bits.
The fact that you dodged the editing to me was a miracle.
Well, Jay, don't forget though, it was a mistake on their part as well. As awesome as Steve did, they didn't film him long enough to give themselves any wiggle room, which I think, and I'm sure in hindsight, they were like, damn, we should have padded this out a bit because
put a camera in the green room, something.
He gave us nothing to work with. I mean, the best that they could possibly do was have these pictures of Steve nodding to questions that you think he was nodding in answer to when he really wasn't. That's like the best that they could have done. They really should have padded it out to give themselves options. But that, I don't think they knew what they were dealing with.
But I think that's why the gal was on there too. Right.
Yeah.
So it was really a three-way conversation. So they did have those kinds of options. And yeah, she was non-existent as far as I was concerned.
She was vacuous.
But you know, the thing I loved about that whole event was it's like when it ended, I'm like, he did it. I was like, whoa, it came out so good. Holy shit. And then everyone,
high five.
You know, we're getting tons of emails and everyone saw it and everyone was, you know, partook in that event. And it was definitely a galvanizing moment, I think, for the skeptical community.
And now to my mom, you're known as my friend who was on the Dr. Oz show. Even tonight, I was talking to my mom and I was like, I'm going to be recording an episode of that show. And she's like, oh, with your friend who was on the Dr. Oz show. Yes, with him.
Yep.
But it's him.
It's sad though. It's sad that that's like a claim to fame. It's terrible.
Well, that's what our culture values. Right. But that's why you went on, you know.
Well, yeah,
how many millions of people saw that?
No, obviously that's what it was about. I mean, that was an opportunity.
I mean,
that's that could
huge penetration.
That's ultimately what we decided. The risks were huge, but it was just an opportunity we couldn't pass up.
Yep.
Yeah. Not just, you know, viewers of the show. I mean, this is the Oprah crowd that tunes into that show specifically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right, it's not like you had a random sample of people. You know, you had this very defined set of people that watch shows like that.
Yeah.
So it was really going in front of almost an angry mob in a sense.
You could have had a real impact where they actually started thinking about what you were saying and actually did some research and possibly even changed their minds.
Oh, sure.
That's just how powerful it can be when you've got an audience that incredibly huge.
Bob, you're referring to the sleepers out there, right? The people that don't know it, but they actually are intelligent and can, you know.
The 1% of that crowd, yeah. Probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably about 1%. But still, right, it's translating.
I did hear from some people that, like Dr. Oz, watch the Dr. Oz show, but say, yeah, but when he goes off on that alternative medicine stuff, I don't really buy it. So, right.
Yeah, that's right. What I was about to point out. I mean, I hate talking about people as though they're these others that are just too stupid to live. Like, it's a huge audience, and these people watch because, you know, he's likable, because he's already famous, just because it's all.
And
on.
A lot of the segments
are tons
are fine.
Of people out there.
A lot of the segments are just straight up information about health related issues. It really is.
How do you know?
It really is only when he delves into these other issues that he screws up.
He comes across like a doctor, so you can't really blame them but for thinking that the things he's saying are all truthful. So it's good to have somebody go on and be like, actually, that's not quite right.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, these people aren't unable to think critically. They're just,
no.
You know, they just need somebody to sort of
Yeah, that's why I call them sleepers, because they actually can and will respond to intelligent thinking. It's just they don't hear it. They don't have, you know, they're not there. They're not dialing in.
Yeah, I guess I'm just saying I think it's more than 1%. I think everybody in that audience has the ability to think critically.
They definitely do, but I don't know that they have the ability, Rebecca, to determine what's alternative medicine and what's not. And that's where Oz, you know, is really, really bad, and why he's kind of an enemy of our community.
It's because he's blurring the lines in a very dangerous lines. Way, absolutely.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, let's move on to the best science news stories of the year. There's one, I mean, I have to say, there's just one news story that everyone is choosing as their favorite news story. It's the number one science news item from
yes.
Discover Magazine. All of our listeners are picking it, and that is
the neutrino, probably.
The faster-than-light neutrinos.
Light. Mm-hmm.
Impossible.
Impossible. It is. I think the most interesting science news story of the year, whether it ultimately
really?
Turns out to be true or not. If it's true, neutrinos moving faster than the speed of light, and that the revisions that will require to relativity is mind-boggling. And if it's not true, if it's some error or anomaly, that's going to be really interesting too. Just figuring out why this measurement is coming out the way it is. So I agree that I think that should be that's the most exciting, interesting news story of the year.
I don't know.
Bob's unimpressed.
I just couldn't get past the idea that it's the overwhelming likelihood is that it's not going faster than the speed of light. I mean, yeah, I came across it many times as well, but that's why I couldn't put it, you know, really near the top of my list. The couple things that I had were the end of the shuttle, the era of the shuttle.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was over this year. And to me, that was a really big science story. It was, you know, such an incredible run they had, such an amazing adventure with the shuttle, and it was really sad to see it go. And I was just so happy that I was able to actually see it naked eye launch. I mean, I wasn't naked, but you know, I saw it with my own eyes.
Whose eyes would you see it with? As Randy likes to say,
Bob, you were naked. You just had clothes over it at the time.
Oh, okay.
Everybody's naked all the time, by the way.
So to me, that was really big. The other big thing for me was the Higgs. I mean, yeah, they haven't really conclusively found it yet, but it's looking damn good. It popped up in the news over and over and over throughout the year. And I think, I won't make my prediction for 2012 now, but I think that we're going to see some great things about Higgs in the very near future. And the other thing, I wasn't sure how to handle this one. I thought this was more of an event, a news story that had lots of good science in it, and that was the earthquake and tsunami devastation of Japan.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of unique.
Kind of unique?
In that it's not like a scientific discovery or an experiment, but it was still this event that had lots of science involved in it that, I mean, it was devastating. I'm just kind of surprised we're not reading more about it still.
For the Higgs thing, I don't think that counts as science news of the year yet, because there's really no news yet. You know, the news is that there will be news.
Yes, that the news is coming. I agree.
Yeah, I think next year. Yeah,
probably next year. The year after is going to be the year of the Higgs. But it's just we're anticipating it. It's coming.
And they're really backing it into a corner. I mean, they're just whittling away at all these different energies that it can now they know it cannot be here and it cannot be here. So if it exists, it's got to be in this little tiny space. And I mean, yeah, it's not going to be as amazing and awesome as when they finally say, yep, we're at Sigma 5 and it's a 1 in a million chance that this is just background noise. Yeah, that's going to be an amazing event. And I guess I'll vote for that next year if it happens next year.
Bob, enough about the Higgs. All right. So my short list also includes just all of the Kepler discovery of exoplanets.
Yeah,
I was totally with you on that, Steve.
Here's the update. I mean, just since our last
episode.
Yeah, just today. Two more planets just about exactly Earth size.
Cool.
They're too close to their star. They're like really, really close. So they're too hot to have life. They're not in the Goldilocks zone. But they're Earth size. So the technology is capable of discovering Earth size planets, capable of finding them far enough away from the star to be to have liquid water to be in the life zone. And you know, we're getting close. We're zeroing in on one planet that has all of those. All of the features that would make it truly a twin to the Earth. We're not quite there, but we're getting so close. I think next year it's going to be very, very likely. But now I'm hearing rumors that NASA's considering cutting short the budget for Kepler. What kind of craziness is that? That's crazy. That's
well,
the most
limited money, and they have a lot of things.
Come on,
that
is the most newsworthy, exciting thing NASA's doing, and they're going to cut it.
Since
I'm not
Hubble,
arguing
really.
With you, Steve. I'm just giving you some of their problems.
I don't know. I don't know, Steve. I mean, I don't think that's really worthy of a news item. I mean, they're really close to discovering this hypothetical twin to Earth that's got all these factors that match the Earth, but they're getting real close, but they're not quite there yet. I mean, maybe next year we can make that year number one.
Steve, I picked that item as well. And I guess for the main reason is – of all the items that we've talked about this year and all the news items I've read that didn't make it to the show, that was the one that actually made me sit in my chair with my hands off my keyboard and think. Because I just went on this wild tangent about, okay, you know, we find these planets and then, you know, we're going to find planets eventually, especially maybe, you know, within the next 10 years with better equipment out in space and the ability to really get an idea of what state those planets are in right now. We're going to find planets that are going to be populated by people. And then I started thinking about, like, well, what's that going to be like? When is that going to take place? How far
using
in the
word
is that
people very loosely. They mean intelligent beings.
No, I mean humans.
Humans in the future, you mean.
Oh, in the humans?
Could go
in
there
the future, yeah.
That whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, then I'm like, I went on that whole story in my head, like, okay, you know, there are going to be pioneers that are going to want to go out there and they might be on generation ships and then they're going to get there and they're going to, you know, it's fascinating. And it's going to happen.
They're going to spend thousands and thousands of years to get there, multiple generations, only to find they don't like it there.
It's boring.
Let's go back.
Isn't Kepler like the little engine that could, though, as far as satellites go?
Yeah, yeah. Wait.
2,326 planet candidates that it's discovered in 2 years.
Everything
we
hoped it would be and more.
I want to throw in a nomination for Tech News of the Year.
Oh, you're going to steal mine.
Am I?
Go ahead.
Maybe I'm not.
Go ahead.
I bet I'm not.
Steal it, Rebecca.
I was specifically going for one that might not be mentioned because of its relative banality. But driverless cars, I think the news of Google putting driverless cars on the street was really awesome and is one of those small yet huge leaps that we as humans are taking into the future.
Yeah, that wasn't my one, but I agree that that's good. All right, so I had a tech one. That's why I thought you might steal it. My tech one is the no focus camera. You guys familiar with this?
Oh, did we talk about that?
No, we did not talk about it. This is a camera. Yeah.
Steve, is this the one that after you take the picture, you could actually focus in on whatever you want to focus in on?
Yes, the Lytra.
That was pretty great. Yes,
yeah, so it splits the light up and stores so much information. And then, so essentially, it's like focusing it everywhere at the same time. So then you could look and you could change what part of the picture you want to focus on after you've taken the picture. So you just, you know, point, snap, and then you could decide how to focus it. It's awesome. And it's different from the software that focuses blurry images, which I think goes right along with this.
Yeah, which is also awesome.
Which is also awesome, but completely different than this technology. This is the camera.
Enhance.
That's the software. I know. It's that actually – that stuff we've laughed at for being nonsense for years, for being a TV thing that's not real. And now, it's real.
It breaks my heart that – our great-great-grandchildren will look back on those CSI episodes and not realize how ridiculous they are.
Right.
They'll be like, well,
obviously. Is that what they're going to be wanting?
That's what's going to happen.
Steve,
Hey, another story I think we missed. Steve, you have your Discover magazine?
Yeah.
Top 100 stories. Story number 59, the mismeasure of Stephen Jay Gould.
Yes, I didn't miss that. I read all about it when it happened because, you know, Stephen Jay Gould is one of my intellectual heroes. I read The Mismeasure of Man. A very interesting story.
Stephen Gould launched a famous assault on Samuel Morton, who was a 19th century anthropologist. And Morton was measured the skull sizes of Caucasians, and it was controversial because they said Caucasians had larger skulls than the other races, and therefore they were more intelligent. And Gould, you know, took him to task, basically, on that, talking about his bad techniques. He got the math wrong, he excluded evidence and all this stuff. But Morton's errors had favored his bias. Gould said that Morton's error had favored his bias, boosting whites or cheating blacks. But this past year, a team of scientists turned the tables on Gould, showing that the true errors were that of Gould's.
Yeah, that Morton actually, the errors, if anything, went in the opposite direction, went against his bias. And in fact, Gould made choices about which data to include when he was reanalyzing Morton's data. He actually had a lot of bias in how he was examining the data. It was a complete flip-flop. Not that it necessarily invalidates all the points that Gould is making in the book. In fact, it's ironic that in writing the book, he presented yet another example of how our preconceived notions and our desires can subtly bias how we look at data, but in a profound way that actually alters the outcome.
Read around the time that they came out, I read several criticisms of that study as well. So I'm not totally... And it's been too long. I don't remember, unfortunately. I can't speak to it, but...
May not be the final word.
Yeah.
But it's good. I mean, this kind of exchange is like, you know, no one is exempt from this kind of analysis or criticism. In the end, the data is the data, and that's what we should focus on. And, you know, we do have to... This is the messy process of science that beats out these biases and how we get to the real answer. So I think it's actually a good story. It's disappointing at first when you hear about it, when you think, okay, yeah, but this is science. This is how it works. Let's go on to the 2011 In Memoriam, where we mentioned the names of famous scientists or just people that intersect, you know, the kind of topics that we deal with, who passed away in 2011. Of course, Christopher Hitchens is on the list. We talked about him already. There's a few other names that I had on the list of people that I would like to just mention. Andy Rooney, who I think was a very sharp wit, died this year. Steve Jobs, of course. Peter Falk.
Peter Falk.
Peter Falk because Columbo. I mean, Columbo was the quintessential unassuming, you know, sort of, yeah, critical thinking detective. Just one more thing. You know, he'd turn around at the end, and then he would, like, totally eviscerate the guy. And he would, like, it'd take him 2 seconds to figure out who did it, and then he would spend the rest of the episode tricking them into revealing themselves. It's a fun show if you've never seen it.
Sounds like The Mentalist.
The Mentalist, it is The Mentalist. The Mentalist essentially is a rehash of Columbo. It started out being about a mentalist who was working for the California Bureau of Investigation using mentalism.
It started out as being a ripoff of Psych.
Yes, and then it turned into a ripoff of Columbo.
Columbo. Yeah. Okay, good to know.
I also had Jack Kevorkian, Dr. Kevorkian.
Oh, yeah.
When did he die?
He died this year for bringing to the forefront, like no one else, to the point where his name became synonymous with doctor-assisted suicide. He brought the issue to the forefront for discussion, for debate, and that's always a good thing.
We
talked about on the show Jack LaLanne. Earlier in the year.
Jack LaLanne tried escaping it as long as he could.
He had it right. Exercise, just, you know, eat right and exercise regularly, and he lived a long, vibrant, physically, you know, healthy life. It's anecdotal, but pretty good, pretty powerful anecdote. Do you guys have anybody you want to add to the list?
Dr. Lynn Margulis.
Oh, oh, Dr. Yeah. Margulis. How could I forget Dr. Margulis? Yeah, yeah,
biologist proposed the theory of symbiogenesis.
And, also proposed numerous theories on 9/11 and HIV that were not well taken by the skeptical community.
Right.
She did a blog tour a few years ago when a book of hers came out, and she very kindly stopped by Skeptic to answer some questions. And it was not an easy time for her because people were acknowledging her contributions to science while still taking her to task for certain controversial statements she had made. And she, I think, pretty gamely attempted to answer them all.
Dr. Baruch Bloomberg, who did work in the hepatitis B vaccine and was awarded the Nobel Prize in Medicine in 1976 for his research into infectious viral disease.
There's also the Nobel Prize winner who died this year, didn't he?
Who they won awarded this posthumously year by
just
a day
barely,
or two.
Yeah, barely. Yeah, barely. It was technically the Nobel community had to say it was that they made the decision before he died, so it wasn't posthumous.
Dr. Ralph Steinman.
Well, Evan, we're not gonna do a Who's That Noisy this week. But one of the best of categories was the best of Who's That Noisy. So do you have a couple of favorites you want to replay?
Yeah, a couple of favorites I'll replay for you, and we'll talk a little bit about each one, all right? Here we go. Here's one of them. You guys remember that?
Oh, God, that wasn't the sad beaver, was it?
No, it was not the sad beaver. That was 2010. Thank you very much. That's way in the past.
Okay, good.
That was the sad squirrel.
That was the sad watermelon. fermenting and hissing and spitting and making all kinds of unnatural noises.
That was a watermelon, the screaming watermelon.
Oh, yeah.
Screaming watermelon. You guys remember
that was – I agree. That was the most shocking Who's That Noisy.
It was one of them.
This year. It was good. The screaming watermelon.
Makes me sad. I mean, not as sad as the beaver, but it makes me never want to have fruit.
All right. Here's another one. This one's, I think, one of the prettiest ones of the year. Here we go.
That's my favorite one.
The screw being dropped down the turbine?
Yeah. Yeah,
that was number one on my list.
I love that.
As one listener described it. Like, if you're an engineer working on engines, that's like the most horrific noise you can ever hear. Oh, gosh, could you imagine? It's. I guess it's the equivalent of what, being a surgeon and leaving a tool in the body or something.
Yeah, like, having the count off. Well, Evan, since you're queuing up sounds, listener Jason Ferber, if you remember last year, he sent a mashup of Jay expressing disbelief about science or fiction items, especially ones that turned out to be true. This year, he did a different mashup, which he's calling Steve Calls It. Can you play that? It smells so much like crap, it's not even worth a second look. Utter pile of crap. If you do some experiments like this and you conclude that we are seeing into the future, you're a crank. So seriously mentally ill, they're just barely able to use the internet. You can't think about it for more than 2 seconds without seeing how ridiculous it is. So yeah, this is a con job. In fact, astrology is a total unmitigated load of pseudoscientific crap. The positive studies are all crap. This study is complete and utter crap because intuition is magic that you pull out of thin air. Like, oh, it's squiggly. Yeah, it's Spain. There were Roman runes all over the place. You're going to try to defend it with science, and you're scientifically illiterate. I mean, this is on the point of being delusional. Because if you can't do that, then your claim's BS. This is the guy who absolutely sold his soul to become a media whore. It's all his tortured apologist logic. They're selling magic amulets and making millions. How cynical must these people be? This is all bullshit, though. Total BS. It's all made up BS anyway. He's a jackass. It basically is a quack fest. But then in cam world, all bets are off. It's bizarro world of research and evidence and logic. It's totally insane. the reliable way to generate a bizarre experience is to make your brain not function properly. Science works, bitches. Holy crap, Batman. Acylococcinum doesn't even exist. At the end of the day, they're using all the same old pseudoscientific crap. Yeah, total crap. He's awesomely cranky.
It's a crappy model.
Homeopathy is impossible, is absurd, is unscientific, and the evidence, in fact, shows that it doesn't work. Wrong and wrong. Clearly off the deep end on this one. This is real science. This is fake science. I am a hopeless fraud. The whole paper is just so ridiculous. BS! It's the same malarkey. This guy is a psychopath. Ooh, that's weird. It's a ghost or it's a UFO. So I don't know where people get this idea from that I'm critical.
Tell us how you really feel, yeah, Steve. I like the one of Steve saying that he's full of, that he's a total fraud. Yeah. That's my favorite one, and I'm going to use that against him in the future.
Right, out of context. Mm-hmm. The mashups are funny, yeah.
Yeah, well, who sent that in?
Jason Ferber.
Jason, you're amazing.
Great job. He's taking a lot of work.
Very nice.
Yeah, you got to target somebody else next year. So we did Jay last year, then me this year. So someone else is going to be on the. Is going to have right.
I'll plan on making a series of outrageous comments. And try to catch that.
Yeah, right. Just to get him so he makes a mashup.
Exactly.
All right. Well, let's go on to science or fiction.
It's time for science or fiction.
Each week, even on the last show of the year, I come up with three science news items or facts, two genuine, one fictitious. Then I challenge my panel of skeptics to tell me which one is the fake. Now, but first, this year, Mike, you're going to give us the science or fiction stats so far this year.
Oh, God.
Are you guys ready for this? So,
definitely my worst year of all time.
Actually, yeah.
I think I had a bad year too, though.
So, 2011.
I think we all did,
fiction,
except Rebecca.
I was thinking I had a bad year too. I don't know.
No, Rebecca, you got 71.7%.
That's a nice
I'll
percentage,
take that.
Rebecca.
It's a good number. Bob, you had 64.6.
So a distant second is what you would call that, right?
Yes.
Well,
in
let's
fact,
see how distant
last
the other
year,
ones
Bob
are, shall
74.5.
Ooh, so, 10% ooh. Drop.
Yeah. You did. So, and then Jay.
Yeah, it was pathetic.
Jay has 45.8%.
Oh, my God.
Compared better to last than random
still,
guessing.
Still better than chance.
Compared to last year's 59.6.
Horrible year.
And Evan has 44%.
I think that was my worst year.
Yeah, it was anybody's worst year, really. And
Rebecca, great job.
Thank you.
And Steve
thank you.
Has 80%. So.
Yeah,
thank
four
you.
Out of five.
Yep, 4 out of 5. Good job, Steve.
Good job.
And the amount of times everybody won was 4 times. And the amount of times that there was a clean sweep was also 4 times.
Okay, pretty good, pretty balanced.
That's all right. Yeah, cut those ends
take
off.
Take that.
And that's that.
And,
all right. Well, here's your final chance of getting your percentages up a little bit in 2011.
Pressure's off for me. You know what? This is senior year. Yeah,
right. This is your victory lap.
I already got accepted.
Hey, victory lap. Let's get this freaking year over with. Finally. Let's go.
So, Rebecca's going first? I like it.
This is what I did for this year. I took three science stories that we talked about on the show earlier in the year. So we'll see if you remember these stories. Of course, one altered to be false from earlier in the year.
I win these because I can hold information in my head for a week. A week. Tops.
Okay, here we go.
All right, come on.
Item number one. While the other shuttles will end their days in various museums now that the shuttle program is over, NASA plans to dismantle the shuttle Endeavour to study the effects of space travel on its components. Item number two, Japan's space agency has joined forces with a fishing company to build a giant net several kilometers in size to collect debris littering space. And item number three, new research shows that genetically modified cells can be made to communicate with each other as if they were electronic circuits. Mike, you get to go first.
Item number one, I think I heard other plans for the Endeavor. So I'm going to go with that one being fiction.
That's it? You're not going to
comment on
two or three?
That's all I got. That's all I'm saying.
Short and sweet. All right, Bob.
Brevity there.
Let's see. All right, then I'll start with three. Modified cells communicate as if they were electronic circuits. Ooh, reminds me of a Next Generation episode. God, I really don't remember a lot about this. It's so fuzzy. How far back in the year did you go? January 1st?
No fuzzy?
November?
but no yeah. Further than that.
Nah, that one's a little suspect. Something's not rubbing me right on that one. That was a weird expression.
Yeah.
That's right up there. That's right up there with Bob touching wood. in his dreams.
That was a good moment.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, Bob,
can we go back and talk about our favorite moments? Because that was probably
Bob. Short and sweet. Come on, end the year strong.
Okay. The space agency and the fishing company. Yeah, that sounds. That sounds somewhat ridiculous, but fishy. Nice. But I'll go with that one. And the the thing is, I thought that with the shuttle, that the shuttles were dismantled. Every one of them is pretty much taken apart and put back together and studied. So why would they need to, why would they need to specify one specific shuttle? Maybe, I guess, possibly for long-term study, but I think they really took apart every shuttle anyway and took lots of parts with it. So I'm going to say that one's fiction. Done.
Okay, Jay.
I'm going to pick the Endeavor one as the fake.
And
you're just trying to one-up Mike, aren't you, Jay? Yeah.
Okay, mull it over.
All right. Evan?
I recall all of these to a certain degree. How's that? Japan and the fishing company and the net. Yeah, Bob, I think you reported on that, if I'm not mistaken. That's definitely
I thought Jay did.
A Bob. No, I thought you did. Could have sworn you did. Well, I guess we'll find out soon enough. And I'm pretty sure that one's remained intact. Steve did not tinker with that one. The genetically modified cells one, I also seem to recall that as written here as I'm reading it right now. And with the shuttle, I recall us talking about it. I know we talked about the four cities or the three cities where they were going? I know Houston's upset they didn't get one, but New York is getting one or parts of one. They're getting the fuselage of one or something to that effect. I don't recall talking about plans to dismantle the thing as part of that specific item we covered. So that's the one that's fiction.
Okay, and Rebecca.
I'll be honest. I was going to go with the space net because I don't remember that at all. But everybody sounds so sure of themselves. So
and you have nothing to lose.
So I'm going to GWE on this one and
GWM,
go with everybody and say
our plan worked, guys.
This was all just an elaborate trap to get me to choose the wrong one.
Okay. So you all go with number one. So we'll go in reverse order then. New research shows that genetically modified cells can be made to communicate with each other as if they were electronic circuits. That one is science. Yes, we did.
Hooray.
We did in fact talk about that one. And the news item is talking about the plausibility of building biological computers, building a computer out of cells, essentially, that are acting like circuits. So that one is true. We'll go to number two. Japan's space agency has joined forces with a fishing company to build a giant net several kilometers in size to collect debris littering space. You all think that one is science, and that one is science. Good job, everyone.
Yeah, how could you guys not distinctly remember
space
that?
It's...
Jay, did you report on it? Did Bob?
Yeah, I did.
All right.
Yeah, you remember that they were going to make a net, and they're going to go out and basically capture space debris.
Yeah,
and then what'll happen is that net will
Jay they're not going to basically capture space debris. They're going to actually capture space debris.
They're going to actually capture space
debris.
Well,
that is the basic of it. That's
I'm saying in simple terms, Steve, so Rebecca understands.
Oh, thank you.
Then what happens is that bag of space debris will go into the atmosphere and it'll just burn up.
Which means that while the other shuttles will end their days in various museums now that the shuttle program is over, NASA plans to dismantle the shuttle Endeavor to study the effects of space travel on its components is complete and utter fiction. the fate of the shuttles is. Enterprise is going to the Air and Space Museum in New York City. Discovery will end up at the Smithsonian. Udvar Hazy Center in Chantilly, Virginia. The Endeavor...
Shantyville.
The Endeavor will go to the California Science Center in Los Angeles, and Atlantis will be at the Kennedy Space Center in Florida.
Isn't the Endeavor going to some Canadian museum?
When we talked about this story, it was the decision was that it's going to the California Science and Space Center.
Oh, no, it's the ARM.
Just the ARM.
The Canada ARM is coming.
ARM, but not the whole shuttle. Right.
We were all fooled by Mike's confidence. Wow. Mike's false bravado.
Talk about getting the crumbs.
Led us to the right decision for the wrong reason.
What do we
reasons.
Do with this scrap ARM that doesn't work anymore? Yeah, send it to the Canadians.
Look at the Stephen Colbert Memorial.
That was an amazing device.
Yes, it was.
Just saying.
Also a Canadian.
All right. Well, glad you guys all ended on a positive note.
Yeah, I'm up to like 45 or 46.
45.1 now, Evan. Bob's at 60.
Yeah. Oh, thank goodness.
Jay's at 46.9. Rebecca's at 70.
You're still all less than 80%. Excellent. Thank you.
It's pretty embarrassing for you.
No,
Steve.
Mike's 1,000%.
Yeah.
Is this your only science fiction this year, Mike?
It's the only time I was invited on the show, Steve.
Yeah. Can you whine a little bit more when you say that?
It was just the only time, Steve.
You know come what, here. Mike? You don't run the SU fan site anymore.
Yeah,
so.
I'm not important to
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, man.
So before we go on to talk about some of the best skeptical quotes of the year, let's do some SGU stats. So all-time downloads. How many times has the SGU, all episodes, all-time, been downloaded?
32 million.
Now 23 million.
26,843,356.
Wow.
We're clogging the internet.
We're running about 150 to 175,000 downloads per week. Our per-episode downloads is averaging about 90,000. What do you think is the single most downloaded episode?
The Joshy.
Well, for
the Joshy one, I think was the
episode 293, yeah. February 26th, 2011, interview with Joshy Berger. 110,000 downloads for that episode. Number two, though, is at 103,000. It's just a little bit behind it, and that's the episode which aired on. We recorded on 5/31/2011, and that featured an interview with Jamie Bernstein, which was also popular interview.
Oh wow.
Jamie, who works for Women Thinking Free Foundation, who infiltrated an anti-vaccination conference and got kicked out. Yeah, we have to break six figures for our per episode download next year.
Yeah,
so everybody who's listening has to go out and tell their friends.
Yeah, spam your friends. Listening. Come on.
Well, we keep going up. Taking the lowest number, which is just like the per episode download, we're at 90,000. You know, it varies. It takes a few weeks to get up to that point, and each episode varies a little bit. But that's about the average where we're getting to. It would be awfully nice if we could just like officially fully break the 100,000 barrier.
It'd be awfully nice.
Awfully nice.
Awfully nice.
Okay, so Jay, we're going to talk about. You're going to give us a quote of the week, but also we're going to just talk about great quotes, skeptical quotes this year.
Okay, well, I have a worst quote of the year. Can I do that?
Sure.
Okay.
Oh, gosh.
Was it?
No.
No, it's. No. This is the quote. Guys, we should do a 24-hour podcast.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank
One
you.
Week oh, before Jay gets
obviously
married.
Paying attention. Also me.
Here's my.
Right.
All right, I want to give mine before someone else jumps on this. Homeopathy is the idea that we just cured the world of terrorism by dumping Osama's corpse in the ocean.
Oh, yeah, that was a good one.
Sean McFly.
That's a good quote.
McFly.
I came across a quote that Jay quoted himself earlier this year, and it just really caught my attention. I thought it was a great quote. This is from Carl Sagan. And he said, microbiology and meteorology now explain what only a few centuries ago was considered sufficient cause to burn women to death.
Well, I was going to come up with another quote, but then I took an arrow to the knee, so I couldn't.
Steve, no.
I'm looking this up because
Bad.
Took an arrow to
just
the knee.
Yeah.
All right. This is a quote sent in by Ulrich Fisher from Surrey, BC, Canada. And this is actually a quote written by Thomas Henry Huxley. To a clear eye, the smallest fact is a window through which the infinite may be seen. He's a biologist and writer of some note.
Thomas Huxley!
T.H. Huxley is one of my favorite historical intellectuals. Well, guys, thanks for joining me this week and this whole year. It's been a lot of fun. 2011's been a good year. What are your hopes for next year?
I hope to be invited to the show.
World peace. Yeah,
Mike wants to be invited back on the show. We'll see, Mike.
When you say hopes, right. what are you talking about, Steve? Like just in general?
For skepticism, or for the SGU, for yourself?
More live shows.
I think maybe we might be able to pull off another live show or two. Probably not 24 hours.
No.
But.
No, I didn't say don't put words in my mouth, Steve.
No, I'm just clarifying.
Shut up. I would like more live shows, huh? And that includes at conferences and stuff.
Yeah, well, there's four conferences next year that we'll participate in some way, one way or the other. There's Nexus, of course, coming up in April. TAM 10 in July. Then Dragon Con on Labor Day. And then SciCon is planning on having another conference next year as well. So the proliferation of skeptical conferences, which is a good thing.
I plan on making, hopefully, at least three SGU videos next year.
I hope you do. I'd like to do three with you as well. I think that they're a ton of work, a lot more work than audio, but they're fun to produce. And if you haven't seen the videos yet, you know, actually, not many of our listeners have actually seen the videos on YouTube. Go to YouTube, look up the SGU channel. The latest one on there is True Fellas. Which is a skeptical take on the movie Goodfellas. I think it's pretty funny, so I think you'll enjoy watching it.
And you should subscribe to the channel and like the video.
Okay, so you can just go to youtube.com/user/theskepticsguide.
And thanks to all of our listeners for listening to us throughout the year, for being so supportive, for being present at the live shows, for those of you who go, participating on the forum, sending us emails, just doing everything to make the SGU what it is and keep it a lively endeavor.
Hear, hear. Mm-hmm. Listeners are awesome.
We do have awesome listeners, I have to say.
We definitely do.
And Steve, we can't forget to thank you. I mean, you do the lion's share of the work. And
hell yes,
which includes doing all the post-production on the show, which, you know, can be anywhere from 4 to 6 hours a week. Not to mention the four blogs that you write and all of the other stuff that you do that a lot of people don't even know about. Like, you know,
right.
Before we totally end the show, I do want to say that you of all the other people working on the show, you stepped up the amount of work that you were doing. We joked about you like almost destroying your marriage and everything. But seriously, you did a crap load of work this year on the 24-hour show, on the videos, and behind the scenes. There was a time when Jay and I would have like an hour-long conversation every single morning for weeks, like prepping for the 24-hour show.
Leading up to that show.
Yeah, it was. So thank you, Jay, for dramatically increasing the amount of work you did this year.
Yeah, well done.
Great job, Jay.
And again,
my mispleasure.
And thanks to all of you for joining me.
Thanks, Doc. Thanks, Rebecca. Thanks, Bob. Thank you, Mike. Thank you,
John Boy. And until next week, this is your Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is produced by SGU Productions, dedicated to promoting science and critical thinking. For more information on this and other episodes, please visit our website at www.theskepticsguide.org. You can also check out our other podcast, the SGU 5x5, as well as find links to our blogs and the SGU forums. For questions, suggestions and other feedback, please use the Contact Us form on the website, or send an email to info@theskepticsguide.org. If you enjoyed this episode, then please help us spread the word by leaving us a review on iTunes, Zune, or your portal of choice. Uh-huh.
Thank you.